This is a Pod Dealers Network podcast.
Me, myself, and I are finally getting acquainted. Forget being famous, I'm enjoying being my favorite. Blessed and highly favored, the prodigal son. My complexion is the prodigal son. I ain't a hero, just the prodigal one. Meaning I'm larger than the sum. As long as my mama got me, y'all can't bother me none. But she told me to love y'all, so please pardon my tongue. Trust me, I'm still learning, though I'm the farthest from dumb. High Rhapsody.
What is TWS Podcast, episode whatever, who cares at this point?
The rants were vindicated.
It's my podcast and I do what I want to.
People, listen.
Word, is it still alive?
It's not working for me, Rip. All right, we're going to keep going.
I know I changed my voice at work.
Bars on the radio.
What is TWS Podcast?
One's ready.
I feel like the answer's
staring at my watch and I'm feeling so new school.
Suicide attempts, how many tries to take?
Damn.
You'd better close your eyes, my child, for a moment in order to be better in tune with the infinite.
It's frustrating when you just can't express yourself, and it's hard to trust enough to undress yourself. Stand exposed and naked in a world full of hatred, where the sick thoughts of mankind control all the sacred. I pause, take a step back, record all the setbacks, and fast forward towards the stars in the jetpack. My feet might fail me, my heart might ail me.
Welcome to another episode of the What Is TWS Podcast. As always, I'm your boy J.Dot Flan, representing the White Pants Society, and thank you for listening. It's my first podcast as the father of a 4-year-old and as a 38-year-old man. Just had a birthday pass. I wanted to get back to a little bit of what I guess I enjoy. I enjoy all the podcasts, but the last, I don't know, maybe month of shows has been a stressful one for me, man. I was getting involved in a lot of politics and racial discussions, and it's just a lot of debate and argument. And as lighthearted as the arguments were, and trust me, as you know, just for fun as they were, like, it's still like stressful feeling like. And I think all black people end up in this situation where, you know, you at times feel like you the representative of everything black and you have to mount this defense against the world, you know, for what they think we are, what we think they think we are, or just a myriad of things. It just feels like you walk around a lot just being on the defensive and trying to prove something and trying to disprove something, like, all the time. I've been in that space for a minute now. Like, this last couple of shows, though, with the homies, and trust me, I love Ross and AJ, and I appreciate everything they bring to the show. I'm definitely gonna have them back to have more spirited debates, even though AJ will tell me I'm wrong months later with no explanation. We'll get to that later, but yeah, like, it's been rough. And the other thing that came out with doing those shows and having those conversations is, like, you know, as a kid, like you may believe a certain monster exists, or you may believe a certain evil out there in the world exists. And there is one thing to, like, to believe it, even if you, like, really believe it, like, you really, like, this is not a game. Like, this is not just some shit I've seen on TV. I think that shit is out there, and that's why I avoid, you know, being in a dark room, or I don't open my closet after a certain time of night, or whatever the fuck it is that you're, like, superstition is based upon these perceived evils. Like, there's a difference between believing it exists and then, like, coming face to face with it, like, seeing it for the first time, approaching it, and even battling it. And that's kind of where I've been. Like, you believe, like, you see on the TV, you know, these people with the hats and the slogans and the, you know, the rhetoric they spew and the shit that they say to people. And you're like, yeah, it's all fine and dandy, like, on the TV. And you know these people exist, and you've always known they've existed. You've always known racism exists. You've always known those people didn't die off and they had children and they've taught their children the same backwards ideals. But until you, like, until you meet it, until you come face to face with it, until you talk to it, until you have a conversation with it, like, that's when it becomes really scary. Like, the scary thing is, is that some of these people that we've vilified for years because of their ideals, like, you have to understand, they don't think that they're wrong. like when I was growing up, there was always the impression that the preacher's kids, you know, like amongst children, the preacher's children knew that the preacher's kids were the worst kids. Like, they was the ones that did all of the worst bad. They was having sex first. They was smoking. They was drinking first. They was the worst children. Like, if the pastor's children were always the worst children. And my mother always was encouraging, you know, my sister and I to hang out with, you know, the church kids. And I mean, we was trying to tell her, like the deeper they are in the church, the closer they are to the that kind of stuff in the church, like, the worse they are. And she'd still be like, yeah, I want you to hang out with them. And her reasoning was, like, at least she knows they know right and wrong. Whether they do wrong, she knows that they know the difference. And that maybe in the heat of the moment, maybe when you're in the situation where a decision has to be made, you can speak to that part of them that know understands the difference between right and wrong, and reason with them, and maybe, like, talk them back to the good path. What I'm learning is that some of these people that we vilify, that we, you know, that we have out there as these evil ones, they're not evil. Because to me, evil is like knowing that you're doing wrong and, like, don't give a fuck. In their minds, is not wrong. They are right. Like it's, you know, I used to wonder about this when watching war movies. Like, we show war movies from one side or the other most of the time, and like, the opposition is, like, is rarely humanized. It's rarely, like, a real thing. It's just a bunch of cannon fodder. It's just a bunch of stuff to mow down, people to kill. You know, you shoot the tank blows up. You don't think about the 4 or 5 lives that already been in that tank at the time it exploded, and their backstories and their children and the wife at home and the jobs, and they used to be kids and they played with fire trucks and all that kind of shit. Like, you know, it's like, there's your side, and then there's, like, the faceless minions of hell or something like that. And then, like, meeting and talking and having discussions, and a lot of this is on Facebook, so I don't know these people, like, personally. Thank God. But I've been in, like, a lot of heated Facebook discussions and arguments, and the thing is that it's not people that, like, just hate and just know the difference between right and wrong and choose to be wrong. As strongly as I believe that I'm right, they believe that they're right. And it gets insanely crazy and scary to the point that, like, we can't agree on, when I say we can't agree on facts, like, that sounds vague, because the news can say two different things and that are on complete opposite ends of the spectrum and quote both of them as facts. But when I'm talking about facts, I'm talking about, like, what words were in an article. Like, to me, that should be undisputed fact. There should be no way for us to argue about whether the words were there or the words were not there. But I have literally gotten into arguments about what words were on the page. You know, I've been told I was illiterate. You know, I've been called illiterate in the last month or so while I've been on this crusade to try to be out there fighting and standing up for causes, and not so much fighting, but just, like, not allowing misinformation to exist without opposition. Like, I think that's my thing. Like, I really want to just relax and chill. Like, I don't want beef. I don't want problems with nobody. I just want to chill. I've had enough drama in this year, this past year for me. This my 37th, 38th, whatever year of existence has been fucking hell of a year. And I've had enough of, like, that shit that I really just want to, I want to take some time enjoying existing, you know, and having a stress-free, drama-free existence as much as I possibly can. And a lot of that includes, you know, relationships with people and being able to have relationships with people that don't become stressful. But then I'm out, you know, in this social world, and like, there's just so much. People just say things so brazenly, so with so much confidence. I learned that in IT too. Like, you can say absolute bullshit, but if you say it with enough confidence, people will rock with it. Like, especially if it's something that they can't quickly fact check. And if you say it with enough confidence, they don't feel the need to. And that's what I run into, you know, online and in these social situations. People just, they put out something and it's a headline. And it came from a website. So, like, you know, like, it don't even matter whether websites are reputable anymore, because people could find a reason to trust or distrust anything. But it's just like, if you found, you found an article, somebody wrote words, multiple paragraphs on something, and this is the headline of it, oh, then what, it has to be true. Like, who would waste their time writing a lie? And so, and I end up, like, fighting people. Like, I fight people about the headline of an article not being backed up in the article. Like, the headline will say, I gave you the real world example. I've been skating around it. Real world example. I had a buddy post, and I won't mention his name, but I had a buddy post something about the CEO of Starbucks saying she hates white people. This was the headline. CEO of Starbucks admits she hates white people. So I read the article. And in the article, CEO of Starbucks is a black woman, and they were talking to her about diversity and how she encourages diversity. And I think she mentioned being in a meeting with one of the vendors, and you know, everybody in their upper management or, you know, the leadership of this vendor's company were white males, and that it kind of, you know, took her by the surprise, caught her off guard. And she said, you know, that she was going to make a phone call, place a phone call to that vendor to discuss diversity. And this was the crux of the argument for the headline, CEO admits she hates white people. And then when I get into arguments with people, because to me, it was just like, I can't let this headline stand unopposed. I can't let this headline stand, because people are not going to read the article, one. And maybe the people who do read the article are the ones that want to hear something that says a CEO said she hates white people. So you're going to pull from it what they decide to pull from it. So I have to say something. And then I find myself in this argument with people saying, show me where she says she hates white people. And it's there. You can't read. Like, and the fact that, like, these are real people. These are real human beings that have children or brothers and sisters and cousins and family members. Like, these aren't, like, these imaginary monsters that I used to think about as a kid. These are real people, just like me. What happens that puts one person on one side of the fence or the other? And how do you know if you're on the right side of the fence? And, like, man, I'm going through all of these like, philosophical debates in my head. But, yeah, I'm realizing that, like, that's the scary thing. Like, I'm coming face to face with the stuff that I knew existed. But just, I don't know, there's some comfort between knowing something exists and then, like, having the proof of it be shoved in your face. But really, I'm trying to take some time off. I'm trying to take some time off and not involve myself in some of this drama, and because it's taking its toll on me. I feel like I wake up some days and I just feel like in conflict with the world. Like, I feel like I'm gonna go to work and I got some beef with a coworker, and I come home, I got a beef with a roommate, and on the bus I got beef everywhere. Like, and I gotta realize how much of it I'm doing to myself. I'm a sick individual. I'm a very sick individual. I find humor in perverse things, and I antagonize. I get that from my mother. I antagonize situations, especially racially, and I think I get that from my mother. I remember my mother, when my sister was in high school, she had to do like a, they were doing a thing on a American poets or whatever, and they needed to present some poetry from an American poet. And there had been some, like, racial tensions with my sister and teachers in the past. So my mother finds this Richard Wright poem, which is basically about a bunch of white people at the scene of a lynching, and describing what you would see at a lynching. And it's in graphic detail, like with the tar and the skin falling off and the, you know, body being hanged. And I mean, it's graphic. And my sister might have been in, I don't know what I said, 10th grade, 10th, 11th grade at the time. And so she goes to school and reads this poem in graphic detail in front of this class of mostly white children. And it went over about as well as you thought it would go over. But it was like, that was spurred on by my mother. I think my mother wanted that. Like, she wanted to do that. She wanted to put that in their faces and then dare them to grade it, you know, incorrectly somehow. And I've inherited that. I've inherited that, like, perverse enjoyment from making people, for I guess, trying to use people's perceived racism against them and make them uncomfortable because of it. I used to do it when I was a kid at home riding the subways, because I'm a small dude. I'm small, you know, 5'9 on a good day, 180 pounds, I'm going to say. So I'm not an imposing dude, but I would I ride the subways in D.C., excuse me, and depending on where I worked, I might have to ride into some white areas. And I would do things like, you know, wear my big coat in the winter and stare at people. And it's because I know I'm not a threat. I know I'm not going to do anything, but I got some sort of joy out of, like, watching people get uncomfortable. And every once in a while, I get a little more brave, and I do stuff like, nice watch. And just have so much fun being able to scare somebody, because I knew I was nothing to be afraid of. Then I graduated to, like, wearing headphones and, like, blasting my music to the point that I knew that, like, people around me could hear what I was listening to, you know, through my headphones. And I'd be on the same trains, and I'd be listening to stuff like The Revolution Would Not Be Televised on repeat. Just have the most angry, militant, you know, look possible on my face. Like, I did sort of take some joy in possibly making people uncomfortable and kind of seeing, you know, looking around and seeing whose face would change or who was looking at me. It's weird. It's sick. I went so far, like, during the height of my drinking, one of my favorite things to do would be to go to a bar that was majority white. And I looked for bars that had the little jukebox that you could control via the internet. Like, you create an account and you could put songs in the jukebox without having to get up and go over to the jukebox. You just on your phone, pick your next song. And so I go into these bars and, you know, have my couple drinks. And then, you know, as inconspicuously as possible from my seat at the bar, I'd queue up, you know, a bunch of Kendrick Lamar or something. And I mean, it'd be like the real, like, militant stuff. It'd be stuff like The Black of the Berry or It's Gonna Be All Right. I would pick songs that I knew had to, you know, that said nigga a lot, and see who sang along or who got uncomfortable or who, like, it just... Yeah, I gotta stop. Dude, I bring a lot of the shit that I get up, that I stress about, on myself, because I create these situations where I'm in conflict with people, and then, like, oh fuck, I'm in conflict with everybody, and I don't have a place to go where I can feel calm and at peace, because I'm at war with somebody everywhere I go. And a lot of the time, I do it to myself. Most of the time, I do it. All of the time, fuck it, I do it to myself all of the time. Normally, I'm a nice guy, and most people get along with me until I, like, find a way to twist the relationship so that we're at odds, and I can talk about how many people are against me. The world is against me. A lot of times, I turn the world against me, but I don't know. This Facebook stuff is different. I do feel like, you know, but I'm just tired of being in that position. I'm tired of being in the I gotta stand up for all things right and black. And it's just so crazy how blatant it is these days. It's difficult to not feel like you have to do it when it's happening all the time. I just saw another one of those white person doesn't believe a girl lives in the apartment building, so she physically blocks her from leaving the building because she thinks that she just robbed somebody or is going to rob somebody. And it's all captured on, you know, somebody's camera phone. And it's just like, was this always had? Like, maybe I do believe to a certain extent it was always happening. And now we're just all more aware of it because it's easier to get stuff like this out in an indisputable format, like video. Like, it's not like a story that gets passed from person to person. It's like, man, look, here it is. Look at it. And I guess, you know, because of that, because we were forced to look at it, because we were forced to come face to face with the monster in the closet that we knew was there, and that's why we weren't opening the closet. It's like, now we have to have those conversations. We have to have those battles. And I don't want to have those battles. I don't think any of us does. But we have to. What is it? I forget the exact quote, but I think it's James Baldwin, you know, said something like, anything that is, you know, I don't know. If you got to face stuff in order to change it, and if you don't face it, you can never change it. I can't remember the words. It's out there somewhere. But yeah, that's where I've been. That's where 38 has taken me. That's where I am at the beginning of 38 years on this planet as a black man. I was trying to look at stuff I wanted to talk about, because I'm really not. I completely flaked on what my point was earlier. So my new pastime, so I went from staring at people on the subway to blasting music real loud that I thought was like militant on the subway. My new favorite one that's probably the most dangerous and is really going to get me in trouble one day is, now I go from blasting music through the headphones loud enough so that you can hear it to playing my music on the headphones, but then having like the music match lyrics full screen on my phone so that the lyrics are going by as I'm listening to the song. Because I know, and we all do it, we all have glanced over at the person's phone to the left or right of us and saw what was on the screen. And I think like certain things just catch your eye, like curse words, and I think the word nigger. And so I listen to a lot of songs that have a lot of cursing and niggas in them. And then the other day, I'm listening to Royce da 5'9", Trust the Shooter. And now that's when I think I crossed the line. Because I feel like in this climate, listening to Trust the Shooter with the lyrics on full display for everybody on a bus, probably a little inappropriate. Probably very inappropriate. I'm pretty sure the lady next to me was like one stop away from calling the police. I could see her moving in her seat a lot, and that's where I was getting the joy from. That's where my giggles was coming from. But yeah, it could have turned out the wrong way. And that would have been me just like pouring gasoline on the fire. She'd have had no reason to call the police on me. I can listen to whatever the fuck I wanted to listen to on the bus. But I'm like purposefully creating the situation that looks, I don't know, weird, suspicious. I don't know. What's your take on it? You know, if you were sitting next to somebody in this climate listening to a song that's like Trust the Fucking Shooter, you know, nothing brings a nigga to his senses like a bustin' Ruger. The rabbit got the gun now, nigga. Trust the fucking shit. It's probably not stuff I shouldn't be playing with people's fears like that. It could turn the wrong way. I don't know. But if something did go the wrong way, would I have a piece of the blame if something bad would have happened to me because somebody took that? You know, these are the conversations I've been having recently with people. So this is why I ask these questions, because I'm trying to figure all this stuff out. And I'm really getting tired of trying to figure shit out. I want to just, like I said, relax and chill and just life be life. And kumbaya, and I love you, and we're going to all be cool. But I can't, man. I fucking can't. But I think this... And so I'm going to try to end this episode on a recovery-related topic. So I think all of this kind of ties into something I've been learning lately in terms of my recovery, and that's the reach of self-centeredness. Like, I think in human nature, we're self-centered to a certain extent, and I think in people who are addicts, even more so. Extremely self-centered. And when I say that, it's not so much a completely negative thing. Like, we're not self-centered as in we always think the world revolves around us, but we can be self-centered enough to believe that everything is our fault. That if people around us are upset, or if something's not working, or if, you know, somebody's not happy, it's because of me. And that's a very selfish belief to have. But I don't think that's the way we look at selfishness most of the time. Most of the time when we think of selfishness, we think, I gotta have, and I'm important, and you're not important, and my needs are primary. But a lot of self-centeredness is, it's all my fault. I can shoulder all the blame. I need to change. And if I change, everything else would get better. Everybody else would be okay. And that's, you know, that's not necessarily the case. And so when you start getting better and not everything changes, it gets very difficult to deal with. Because now you're kind of losing that sense of, is grandiosity a word? I'm going to go with it, grandiosity. Because you're changing, it didn't like magically change the world. It's like, how much more do I have to do? Am I not doing it right? You know, it still goes back into this self-centered stuff, and all that stuff wants to push you back toward the depression and anxiety and stuff that you used to have before, because now you're trying to change, and the change is not being effective. It's not producing the result that you thought it was going to produce, because you are the center of the world, and if you change, like, the ripple effect was supposed to fucking put rainbows in the sky everywhere for everybody at the same time, and it didn't. And so now what? I'm still fighting people. I'm still arguing people. I'm arguing with more people because I'm building more relationships, and I'm learning things about people. I'm learning how to talk to people, but it's still putting me in the same conflict, because conflict is just there. Like, I couldn't, I'm not that powerful of a human being to erase that. I gotta let some of that go. I don't know. I wanted to mention this too. Haim Saban, I think his name is, the guy who is like the producer, or the guy who came up with the idea for the Power Rangers. Did you know he had that idea and was pitching that idea for 8 years before somebody took? He was being laughed at and had doors closed in his face, slammed in his face for 8 years before somebody decided to take a chance on that. 8 years. And so if in year six he would have let everybody else's belief that this wasn't a good idea, or if he'd have let the world not being ready for what he had squash his passion for whatever it was he was trying to do, he'd have missed out on a multi-billion dollar opportunity. If he'd have done that in year six, year seven, if he'd have let 7 years of people telling him, dude, you're crazy. Can you imagine holding on to something like that and believing in it in the face of that much opposition? You know, but that's what it takes. I'm learning that that's what it takes. I think I'm 3 years in. I'm ready to give up. Fuck it. Haim Saban is my new hero. I'm going to be the next producer of the Power Rangers. This is the dumb shit I think to myself. All right. I don't know what else I got. I've just been rambling. This is 38-year-old me. These are the lessons that I've learned. This is the stuff I want to pass on. Don't be self-centered, but also don't let the world dictate to you what's right. Fight when you can. But don't make a living fight unless you're Floyd Mayweather. I can't do it. I needed a break. This was my break episode for me to just ramble and just talk and get shit off my chest and not like feel like I had to defend the world, or I had to change the world in one episode, or I had to change somebody's heart or prove to somebody that they were wrong. I take a break every once in a while, which is the cool thing about realizing that a lot of the weight that's on you is weight that you put on yourself. You know, when you realize that a lot of the conflict that you're in, you put yourself in, or a lot of the stresses that you deal with, you put on yourself. It's not necessarily a bad thing to come to that realization, you know, or something to be down about. It's a great realization to make, because if you're the one to put yourself in it, if you put the weight on you, you can take it off. And that's what I kind of had to come to this week, is that, you know, I'm feeling like this, and I have all this anxiety, and I have all of this worry and all of this stress, and a lot of it is stuff that I'm putting on myself. I decided that I had to, you know, wage this war. I had to defend this ideal, or I had to, you know, object to this mistruth. I decided I had to do those things. And the same way I decided I had to do them, I could decide I'm not going to do it today. And that's, you know, taking the day off. Chill, I ain't going to do it today. You ain't gonna stress me today. They are. They're gonna say something. Somebody gonna pull me back in. But for a while, I have the mental fortitude to resist, I'm gonna enjoy it. I'm gonna count this one a blessing, a victory, and move on with the rest of my. I want to say this: if I'm 38, then this is my 39th year. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm enjoying the rest of my 39th year. I thank y'all for rocking with me through this year. It's been tumultuous. It's been crazy. And if for some reason you're still listening, you're a saint. God bless you. I'm going to rock out with some wise words from one of my favorite artists originating from the DMV. Until we speak again, be safe and be the light. And I love y'all. All right, let's rock out.
Almost always, always go with your first choice, ay, with your first voice, say in your mind sight, blind by the thirst to make it work. Sometimes you gotta lay it in the dirt and let it shine. Fork and roll, one that's chose, least I drove. Nothing's easy, what's a freebie? All is sold. We've been reaping in a fold, in the creases where I stole. None can see me, see my lows. Only highs are meant to show, like all I meant to be is so. Verbal truths are beaming close to